Okay, good. Well, thanks. Sorry. Recently, while reading Deborah Murphy's book, Place Apart, published in 1978, I was struck by the following comment. Quote, "What most surprised me was the number of Catholics who admitted that in a changed atmosphere, which did not make them feel inferior, they would willingly forget about the United Ireland and be faithful to a power-sharing Stormont substitute if it did not insist on ritual affirmations of loyalty to the Crown. For those Catholics," Murphy observed in 1978, "the intense issue was job discrimination." Now fast forward to June 2012 in the Saravona border poll, where the Belfast Telegraph found that only 7% of Catholics would vote to have the border removed now, and 48% might offer it in 20 years' time. Here, said the Telegraph, quote, "rural equality in employment, housing and power sharing at Stormont proved decisive factors in this result." Perhaps even more interesting is a BBC Northern Ireland poll conducted in February this year, where 23% of those who considered themselves Sinn Féin voters said they would back the status quo, with 56% of SDLP voters saying that Northern Ireland should stay in the UK. Over 90% of Protestants wanted Northern Ireland status to remain unchanged too. Collectively, these figures point to Northern Ireland as a success story rather than a failed project. Convincingly, they point to its continued status and legitimacy. What these figures also point towards is what Murphy thought in 1978, that the issue is not reunited Ireland for Catholics, but equality and ending discrimination in Northern Ireland. What the figures intimate too is that the prospect of national change is a much bigger concern for Protestants and Catholics, even as the prospect of the United Ireland South throughout even the distance. This ongoing and unchanging anxiety and unionism about the prospect of a united Ireland as that very prospect disappears over the horizon suggests one of two things. Either unionism is an irrational phenomenon, or, and more likely, fear is the core, the locus of unionist identity and the basis of its worldview. Fear is the emotive pole for unionism on our perceived identity and relates to change. But since the future is about change, this is hardly an encouraging picture for envisaging unionism playing a constructive role in how the future develops. If fear is the focal point of the identity, how does it work? Firstly, it's the main emotive linkage to political representation. As we can see, unionism continues to fragment following in the footsteps of its religious tradition, where one then formed another church if those available seemed to lack purity or offered the expected level of defence against external threat, Catholicism. Look at how unionism has responded in the wake of the flags dispute to see this in action. It blames itself and splinters in its perceived weakness to cope with what is seen as a step towards dissolution and failure. Such fear is, of course, directed inwards, the main threat of unionism being unionism itself and its inability to maintain or protect what it holds. Integral to this precariousness is an inherent lack of confidence and the constant threat of loss. Indeed, it is a pertinent question whether it is the fear of loss or the loss of fear which preoccupies unionism most. So I ask it again and want you to think about it. Is it the fear of loss or the loss of fear that matters most to unionism? Fear in general derives from the possibility that fragility might be revealed, and so to maintain fear, the threat of fragility must be ever present. The chance that vulnerability will become evident is a condition of anticipated powerlessness. This means that the threat of both vulnerability and powerlessness must be at the forefront of the unionist imagination and continue to be the core of anxiety. The opportunity to exploit this fear for political gain surely comes from areas where aggressive assertions of difference can be most easily and immediately manipulated, and that, as we have seen, relies particularly on symbolic association, badges, flags, marches, buildings. But this also means that borders which emphasise such divisions offer the best opportunity to prove you are reliable to the cause and not likely to contribute to the demise of unionism. The fact that Northern Ireland looks more secure as an entity than ever, and that as peace and joy, society will become more individualistic, as with capitalist societies more generally, which serve the Protestant unionist ethos even more, hardly seems to matter. One could be forgiven for thinking that as threats disperse, some unionism becomes even more precarious, even more vigilant against loss than before, and increasingly fearful of itself and how to respond. And Sinn Féin could stoke this situation much more if they wanted to, Imagine what would happen if they trotted drive you by about ending sterling and replacing all the oil and currency with euro to parallel European but Irish economic policy. In his book The Righteous Mind, Jonathan Haidt highlights how the moral ties that bind communities invariably blind them. This concept of blindness is highly relevant to unionism, it seems to me, where one sees not what is there but what isn't, and where fact matters less than fiction. Perhaps paranoia or hypochondria are other conditions. How can it be changed? To begin with, unionism should not only reflect on the fears that seem to shape reactions in nearly everything, but it should start to look outside itself, outside its own domain, and consider what a future different Northern Ireland might look like. Indeed, what do unionists imagine when they think about this? Multiculturalism is a possibility, but also a problem for unionism, not just because Sinn Féin have already used the term, but because the siege mentality is in opposition to all others. If at its heart the unionist previous position is to preserve and hold what it has, then multiculturalism too is a threat. And it's a much bigger threat when Sinn Féin talk about it, because the concept is then linked to those who might use it to dissolve Northern Ireland by stealth. I think the use of this term by Sinn Féin is itself interesting, and a recognition that change through the span of political polarisation and route is not going to achieve the changes they want. One way to think externally rather than internally, or at least to keep the two in some kind of balance, is to engage with the reconciliation debate, which Sinn Féin formally initiated in 2011. That Sinn Féin initiated this debate is enough for many unionists to reject it. Yet a chink of light has emerged which challenges this blindness, and it's come from the PUP. The PUP has seen that empathy and interest in this debate has not been agreement with Sinn Féin about it, and this in itself, it seems to me, may be indicative of a slow confidence growing, as well as a recognition of the need for critical self-examination. The reconciliation debate can be used to create a new context for thinking about Northern Ireland, because it can offer the opportunity to think beyond traditional limitations and boundaries, and this was particularly evident in the PUP paper, Transforming a Legacy, released last month. The thrust of the document, even if released by a political party, is that reconciliation must be a social rather than a political process, and that it must be inclusive, not exclusive. Although the concept of inclusivity, like any concept, can be twisted to serve political ends, it is clear that the PUP is stressing the need for the involvement of all, and so is moving beyond traditional political boundaries. The document stressed that any reconciliation process must be for the good of society as a whole, and that there should be no hint of exclusion or bias. Importantly, it must not be an extension of the political process, and that is why it must be conceived in terms of social impact for the good of society, for the common interest. The document is built around the idea of inclusivity, and this, importantly, is the change that must take place if the exclusivity of Northern Ireland politics is to change, if the divisions of polarisations are to be confronted and a productive way ahead is to be found. For now, inclusivity must be ambiguous, just as the concept of all is ambiguous. It must have latitude which exceeds the conventions of political thinking. And this is where the PUP has merit, document has merit, because in conceiving reconciliation in terms of the social, it marks a break from the traditions of the worldview, where it's the individual that matters most. And in moving to the social, the PUP are actually emphasising a context which is great appeal to Catholics, possibly more so than Protestants, and this makes it particularly important. There will, of course, be much talk which resonates with the loyalist base, but make no mistake, uncomfortable and necessary conversations have now begun, and meaningful shifts are underway. It does not matter that the idea of reconciliation will be contentious, and that discussing what it means will involve dealing with hard questions. It does not even matter at this stage that no one really knows what reconciliation means. What is important is that the reconciliation debate can provide a new context, a new terrain for thinking about how the past can either restrict or release, as well as how it binds and blinds. Unionists will no doubt get hung up on truth and responsibility, and one can see how just in South Africa these different concepts of truth will be needed to deal with events that any formal process, if it were to exist, would create. But if Northern Ireland is to move away from its violent past and deal with the legacy of conflict, it must, as part of this process, deal with something which is more important than the actual inflicted pain and suffering which took place. It must come to terms with the destructive influence of mythology. As the historian T.W. Moody put it, if history is used in its proper sense of a continuing, probing, critical search for truth about the past, my argument would be that it's not Irish history, but Irish mythology, which has been ruinous to us and may prove even more lethal. History is a matter of facing the facts of the past however painful some of them may be. Mythology is a way of refusing to face historical facts. The reconciliation debate, and especially if it develops into an international independent process, misses this outcome. It's an opportunity not just to recycle traditional narratives, but to question the very basis of the mythology that frames those narratives and the actions which sought justification from them. And this is a real challenge for unionism, because it will need to sort legitimate fears from illegitimate ones. It will need to examine how fears were used to discourage violence, but also contribute to it. This will be a painful journey of self-reflection that will have Northern Ireland will possibly not move on. And fears will continue to keep unionists and loyalists in the siege mentality, which hinders them more than Republicans. Perhaps the lack of response from unionism about the CPP paper is itself indicative. Perhaps it highlights that when it comes to debating the future, unionism is frozen because it's strengthened in defending the past, and that the future is envisaged as little more than a continuation of that past. But it also suggests that when the discourse moves to the social rather than the political, there's an opportunity for constructive engagement. The silence of unionism to the PUP paper is therefore revealing. It points to the real possibility of a new space of conversation. Loyalists must work to occupy that space and influence it, and do so quickly if it's not to be consumed by unionism and the same fears and anxieties of the past, fears and anxieties which loyalists in particular have been disadvantaged by.